Welcome back to Naturally Green, Michael Warren Thomas, on a frosty morning, although in the city of Rochester, just maybe barely a frost. We'll see if it touched any of the annuals in our garden. There's still a little bit of basil that we didn't cut back to make pesto with, and impatiens are one of the first to go. Begonias aren't very tough. So as one of our listeners texted or emailed me yesterday, bring your plants in or make room for them to come in soon, because at some point we'll have a killing frost. And outside the city of Rochester, many people probably did have a killing frost in the upper 20s. Here in Rochester, it got down to 34, somewhere in that range. Again, it looks like the forecast, for the next 10 days is pretty good in terms of frost. I think, in sort of somewhat ironically, October 15th, just 24 hours before the frost around our area last night, is the frost-free date for Rochester. So the city of Rochester and some of the suburbs may have escaped the frost last night. And if you did, you're probably good for another at least 10 days, it looks like. Maybe a couple of weeks. Maybe we get into November before we actually have a killing frost here in Rochester. So I would expect the farm markets, the farmers markets, would have a lot of tomatoes and peppers that they probably picked yesterday in anticipation of this potentially killing frost last night in the outlying areas. And this is when being close to a lake makes all the difference, and that's one of the reasons that the vineyards hug the Finger Lakes, because it moderates the temperatures. And if killing frost in a vineyard shuts down the ripening. So if areas got a killing frost last night, they might as well pick, because those grapes aren't going to get any riper. They've picked a lot of them already. The harvest is mostly done at this point, but there are still some grapes out there that they would like to ripen a little bit more, maybe. And the killing frost just shuts that down. And hopefully it didn't shut down too much in your own garden. There are so many things that you can bring in for the winter. And again, at this point, maybe you can wait a couple of weeks. I left my lime and lemon trees out last night. They can tolerate a minor frost. See the freezes in Florida and the citrus, and the trees tolerate that pretty well. So I wasn't worried about them. But a couple other tropical plants that I probably should have brought in, but given the forecast that we could leave them out for at least 10 days, maybe two more weeks, I did not bring them in last night, and it looks like I barely escaped with, so far it looks like, no damage. But, the begonias in general make fantastic houseplants. I've said this many times, even this fall and previous years, almost any begonia will bloom for you inside with very little light. Doesn't need a sunny window. It will just bloom all winter. Makes a great houseplant. Geraniums will bloom all winter. My elephant ear, I propagated it, well, divided it. It had a bunch of tubers, and now I have half a dozen elephant ears. I'm not sure. I may dig up the tubers and save those, kind of like you would the gladiolas or canna lilies. You can save those tubers inside for the winter. And dark, cool, dry, maybe packed in some peat moss just to keep them for the winter, and then bring them out in the spring. But you do have to get started early in the spring if you want them to be caught up with what you might see at a garden center in the spring. You really got to start in the late winter with those tubers. So take a look around your yard. See what you might want to save this winter. Rosemary needs to be brought in. Lemongrass needs to be brought in. Those make great houseplants unless you have a cat, because cats and dogs, cats in particular, love lemongrass. And they eat it and then just they throw up, which is, I guess, how they get rid of hairballs, by eating grass. But it's something we tried to avoid. So I'd put the lemongrass up in my attic studio space so the cat couldn't get it up here. And you can also take cuttings of things. So if you want to bring the whole plant in, take some cuttings and root them. You can use rooting hormone and sterile potting soil, but frankly, a lot of these things will root without those. Just stick them in a potting soil. Don't keep them wet. Too much water they'll rot. But just kind of a humid environment. If you can create one, sometimes you can do that with a plastic bag, but. Even I wouldn't even do that, because that's probably inviting problems with fungus and things. I would just, I've done this before. I've got, I have some sort of plant in potting soil that I brought inside, and I just stick some cuttings in the potting soil of that plant on the edges to root them before I move them into a regular pot. Someone posted about their pineapple sage a couple days ago on Facebook, and it was just starting to bloom. Actually, it had quite a few blooms on it, but pineapple sage it smells like pineapple. Doesn't taste at all like pineapple, but the leaves do smell like pineapple. And it has this gorgeous red flower, which unfortunately blooms pretty much after the hummingbirds have left for the south. I haven't been able to get it to bloom earlier. If you have any tricks for getting a pineapple sage to bloom earlier, please let me know. I may need to keep it in a pot and kind of stress it. Sometimes plants under stress will flower because they're trying to reproduce themselves before whatever stress it is, drought stress maybe, for example, before it kills them, they're trying to propagate. So that might get it to bloom earlier. And I've actually intentionally purchased a couple of pineapple sage that had some flowers on it. I'm not sure how the nursery managed that. And you bring them home, you put them in the ground, and then they start growing like mad, but they don't flower. They're just pushing new growth until basically October. So I haven't actually tried to root pineapple sage before, but you might want to. Well, at this point, if it survived last night, it's going to be fine. You're going to enjoy it outside blooming for 10 days to 2 weeks probably. But as we get some killing frost eventually show up, you can just cut the stems and bring them in a nice bouquet of pineapple sage. It's really a pretty flower in the salvia family. Maybe more than the sage family. And it's a really gorgeous red. It's just every year you're waiting for when's it going to bloom? Frost warnings. Some years it gets killed before it actually blooms when we get a really early killing frost. But this year, so far, so good. The pineapple sage is just coming into full bloom. And it's an annual that I'm not sure how well it'll survive inside for the winter. I don't think I've ever tried to keep one inside for the winter. But it might work. It's going to die outside, so you might as well experiment with a few of these things just to see whether they can survive indoors over the winter with some, at least in my case, benign neglect. You can send me if you want. If you have questions about what you want to overwinter, email me a photo or two, michael@saverlife.com, and I'll try to give you some advice on just how it might do, or what you should do to propagate it. The plants that you bring in this fall are the mother plants for next year, and you really you could propagate hundreds of new plants off of a couple of mother plants that you save over the winter. It's really, it's pretty amazing how many you can propagate. And they are, especially if you have some that are hard to find, or colors and flowers like the geranium that I have. I have no clue what variety of geranium it is, but it's this almost fluorescent pink purple. And so I've saved that for several winters now, and we'll be bringing that one in again. It's time to plant garlic. It's time to plant spring bulbs. It's ideal time of the year to put those in the ground. And, you know, especially, you know, it's going to be a difficult next few months in winter with the coronavirus. Somehow it seems even more important this year to plant some daffodils, maybe some tulips, some snowdrops, some things to come up for you in the spring and enjoy and look forward to. They're pretty inexpensive. They're relatively easy to plant. And again, they're going to give you, at least in the case of daffodils, flowers for a decade or more. Tulips generally last 3 or 4 years and then they fade out. But you know, every year I say that, and I have these tulips from a previous homeowner who maybe planted them 50 years ago. We've been here for 26 years, and there's two varieties of tulips in particular that come back every year for all of these 20 plus years, in spite of some fairly shady areas where, you know, things that we've planted now have overgrown and shaded out some of those areas. Some of these tulips continue to bloom. They're there to remind me that it's not tulips that don't come back every year. It's the way we're breeding the tulips. We're breeding them for their display this year. We're not breeding them for reliability and coming back in future years. So some do, and I should try to propagate the ones that I have that come back each year. Two different kinds. One is a really odd variety, and I've been meaning to research at some point what it is, because it also could be a virus-affected tulip, which distorts the flower. I don't know. I gotta do some research. Perhaps this is the winter to do that, on exactly what variety of tulip we have. So, but in general, the tulips that you buy in the store are not going to last for 20 plus years like these. But the daffodils probably will. So plant lots of daffodils, plant a few tulips, and then a whole bunch of other little bulbs. And you'll have a great display with the snowdrops starting in February, probably sometimes in January. Some winter aconite in March, sometimes earlier. Anemone blanda, Scilla siberica. Like I mentioned them last week. These are inexpensive bulbs. You only have to plant them a couple inches deep, so much faster to plant. And they will come back generally every year, and many of them will seed themselves, and you'll have lots more in the future rather than just whatever you started with. So the little bulbs, many of them do seed themselves. The daffodils and tulips do not. But you will get bigger clumps of daffodils as they expand underground. And again, get a couple dozen. Dig a big hole. You can put in 6 or 8 daffodil bulbs in that one hole, cover it partway up, put a few winter aconites in, and then finish covering the last couple of inches, and tamp it down pretty well so the squirrels can't dig, and or at least make it harder for them, and you're going to have some great flowers in the spring. You may find some great bargains at the garden centers and plants right now. It is still fantastic time to put things in the garden, to transplant, divide. It's a little nicer to divide hosta now before they get frozen and frosted and turn to mush. The leaves just turn to mush. So if you can catch them now, it's just a little easier to divide them. And you can take one clump of hosta and use a flat-bladed spade to cut it with a knife into maybe 4 or 6 different sections, and you'll have some great hosta plants next year. It'll come up looking beautiful, and with well-established roots, they'll be way ahead of where they'll be if you divide them in the spring. And I may have to divide and move some big hostas that I have. The area they're in, they used to get more shade, and it was actually a neighbor's tree that came down, and now they get more sun. And there are some varieties of hosta that can take a lot of sun. These varieties, the two that I have, don't seem to be happy. They do okay, but the leaves will get scorched during the summer, and I think I may finally move them and find a new spot that is much shadier for them. I can always move them back to where they were, but it's these are big clumps. This is I might need a front end loader to dig these out of the ground. Just kidding, but I'll have to kind of work my way around them. I may have to divide them in the ground where they are, and then those chunks I'll be able to plant separately. You generally want several growing points on each piece of hosta that you divide. So sometimes it's tempting to try to divide them into as many as possible. And it's probably better to do, you know, 8 clumps of them than trying to do 20 individual hosta plants. So you can kind of tell where the individual plant is, that growing point where it sends up the leaves and a flower from that one point. But I think it'll look better in the long run if you divide it in as clumps rather than trying to do individual plants. Even if it's just a small clump of hosta, then maybe just divide it in half. But don't try and divide it too much. That could... they probably won't all survive, although who knows? It's a tough plant. It really is. If you have some plants you can't identify in your garden, send me a photo or two. It's always fun to identify them and then see what plants people have in their gardens. If you have any plants that you just fell in love with this summer, send me a note. And it's one of the reasons to have a diverse landscape. Each summer, each growing season, each winter is different. Some winters are really harsh and will kill some things that normally would survive. Some summers are super dry and super hot, or very rainy, and the spring is wet and cool, and so some plants don't do well. Some plants love that. So having a diversity of plants in your garden helps in many ways, but just for hedging your bets in terms of the weather that we're going to have coming up, add some more diversity. Get some different varieties, different plants, different plant families, things that you've maybe never had in your garden before. Figure out a way to make room for them. And that diversity will help in attracting birds and butterflies and bees. It will help in general. So much of our developed landscape is a monoculture. It's largely grass. It's a few different trees that are way overplanted. We're using too many of the same trees. as we have for a long time. And the same with perennials. There's a few that are kind of everywhere, and we really need more diversity in the landscape. More diversity in a lot of places, but in terms of this gardening show, it can make a huge difference in your garden, for the, you know, the ecosystem that you're creating. Some of those plants will have seeds for the birds or berries. Some of them will provide nesting space. Some of them will provide leaves for caterpillars to eat, which will in turn turn into butterflies or moths. Again, diversity of the landscape is the key. I saw one, I forget what kind of oak tree that they were comparing, but it was an oak tree, and here in, you know, in the Northeast, compared to, I think it was maybe a katsura or ginkgo tree, which are not native trees. And the difference in the number of types of caterpillars that could live on that oak tree versus that that non-native tree, and I forget what, I think it was an arrow or a it was a katsura, but it might have been a ginkgo tree. The difference is massive. I think the ginkgo or the katsura could it might host, you know, a dozen or two different types of caterpillars, and we're not talking about gypsy moth, you know, and some of the invasive caterpillars that one could get. But you don't realize how many different caterpillars might be on a large tree. You never notice them because they're small. They don't eat that much, like the gypsy moth does, just defoliates the tree. But there are many, many caterpillars which kind of coexist, don't ever really damage a tree at all, and we don't realize they're there. So there might be a dozen or two different ones on these non-native trees. The oak tree, I think it was somewhere in the range of 300 different types of caterpillars that could be found on an oak tree, again, a native oak tree. So that's the kind of drastic difference that that having native trees and shrubs and perennials can make. So as you're looking at diversity, try to work in some native plants as part of that. And some of them are turning pretty colors right now. The shad trees, those are serviceberry, one of the first to bloom in the spring, have a very pretty fall color. There's redbud trees, which are one of the early ones to bloom in the spring, has a heart-shaped leaf that's really pretty. And tons of other native plants that you could add to your garden. The Genesee Land Trust has been educating people about these for a long time. There's lots of information online about native plants, and maybe that, you know, gives you a structure and a focus to what you want to add to your landscape, to figure out what kind of native plants you could have. One of the native perennials you should add is ironweed. This is late season blooming. It finished blooming already, but it was blooming in more August, September, I guess. Ironweed can get quite tall. I think there are several varieties that maybe get a taller one and a medium height, but they're several feet tall. And some I saw at Bricolo Nursery were in their gardens were 7 feet tall, but some really stunning purple flowers on them in the late season, late summer, and are a really good source of nectar for butterflies and bees. So ironweed is one that you should look for as something to add where you get quite a bit of sun and you want something to get some height. It would be a really nice one. And if you want some ideas, specific plants maybe in a specific spot because it's shady or wet or super dry or whatever circumstance might be, send me a description and I'll try to give you some suggestions on a few plants that you could add. But again, fall is the ideal time to put them in the ground. You know, once the ground freezes, it's a little late at that point, but really almost up until then, it's great time to plant. There'll be a lot of rain this week, so if you get some plants divided or put in the ground this weekend, they will get well watered this week. There's a lot of rain in the forecast, but luckily no snow. And again, comments, questions, send me an email, michael@saverlife.com. I'll be back with a food show, Discover the Finger Lakes today, and tomorrow it's the Grapevine at 9 a.m. here at saverlife.com. Have a great day.